Hello and welcome to A Vague Idea. This is a podcast that it wears so many hats now because what the fuck is anything anymore, right? Each and every week we have a guest or not, and we maybe talk about what we've been watching on Netflix, or we talk about other things that we're doing to try to survive the pandemic. Last week I talked to someone about faith in a very in-depth and honest way. With me, as always, is you, the listener. Shannon is still not with us this week, but she'll be back. Don't worry. Shan fans, she's gonna come back. But I got a treat for you, because this week we're going to talk about video games, a thing that many of us are using to cope with, being forced indoor kids, or at least indoor kids who are smart enough to choose to stay indoors. And my special guest is a wonderful human being. He is a voiceover artist. He did the reading of my novel, The Retroactivist, for Spaceboy Books. And I am going to run out of other ways to qualify you, so I hope you tell me more about what you do for the listeners. But it's Marcus Freeman. Marcus, welcome to the show.
Well, it's so awesome to be on A Vague Idea. Hi, Nate. How are you? It's good to talk to you.
It's good to talk to you, too. We got to talk a little bit before we started the episode about how just incredibly horrible everything is.
In general.
Yeah, and just the daily terrors of navigating this thing we call a country right now. Yada yada. I don't know. I don't want to get too far into it again, but I'm doing okay. We're healthy. We're safe. We're staying inside as much as we can. Working from home. Doing all that. How are you?
All that. As well. You're in Colorado. I'm in Ohio. I'm sheltering in place and taking all the right steps and trying to keep my father safe and myself safe and others equally safe. So yeah, all that stuff is definitely on my mind, but yeah, that's how I'm doing. And much like the topic of today, I am playing a fuck ton of video games.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, I'm deep in one game, but I've been playing a few other things and we'll get to this in a second. I do want to say, I think it's really awesome that this situation at very least sort of forced us to do an episode of the show together, because we were doing everything in the studio. It was going to be very tricky to somehow like Zoom you in and have people in person and kind of deal with the response time of the game show format of the program.
Oh yeah.
But now I get to spend some time with you. So if nothing else, I'm grateful for that. So yeah, let's talk about some video games, right? I've got a short list of broad questions that I hope will lead us to deeper conversations about it.
Okay.
Let's just start with what you're playing now. What's your jam during the pandemic?
Well, this is going to be kind of embarrassing, and it's going to make me sound so ridiculously basic, but.
I saw actually what you were on last night on PlayStation, but...
Oh, man. So, I have given myself over to Call of Duty Modern Warfare.
Okay.
And here's why. I haven't touched a Call of Duty product in about maybe 8 years or so. It's been a long time. I saw that franchise repeat itself into the ground and come out every year and not really iterate or change very much of anything at all. And
it became like an EA Sports game. Where we've slightly updated the rosters, but basically it's the same game. We made some things worse, we made some things better.
Yeah, we'll give you a new campaign, we'll reskin everything, and we'll throw you back in all the tiny little maps that we love watching you destroy each other in.
Yeah.
But here's the thing with Modern Warfare that hooked me, and that it surprisingly hooked me, is that it's kind of like a soft reboot of the original Modern Warfare that came out 10 years ago or so. That game was the first game that came out when I started working at a GameStop store in Oakland as a manager, Oakland, California.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So I remember starting a week before the original Modern Warfare launched, and I wasn't, at the time, I wasn't a first-person shooter player at all. I didn't like it. I thought they were boring. I love RPGs. That's my jam. Ever since Time Out of Mind, it's always been.
I have a very common narrative.
Yeah.
So yeah.
love RPGs. Modern Warfare was not on my radar. It was like at the time it was like any other sports game to me. It's like, why would I want to? And the employee who was training me is like, Marcus, you need to play this just because it's a good game. And you work here now. You're a manager of the store. This is Call of Duty, man. You need to know the game. So give it a shot. And I did. And it was a ton of fun. And it got me into first-person shooters in general. I played the series a lot when I was in California. I had a roommate and I who had our own individual Xboxes at the time. So we could play next to each other in the same room. We had a gigantic warehouse we lived in. And we would play side by side on the same team online against other folks. And it was great. So when I heard about this new version of Modern Warfare coming out, I thought, oh, great. Well, here's the same treadmill again. But what they did was they recreated a lot of classic maps and pushed them back into the game and made them free. None of the packs of the game or downloadable extra content cost a ton of money. They went into a season cadence, which is they're copying off of Fortnite, from what I understand. And a lot of other huge AAA titles are also doing the season cadence of extra content.
Does that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's an old game that has a lot of nostalgic stuff in it for me. And I get to play these old Modern Warfare maps with my friends now that I never got to play with them 10 years ago, and my cousin and my other friends that live here. So for me, it's like a nostalgia trip. And there's so much extra junk that they throw at you to unlock. And there's so much RPG, XP, carrots and sticks all over the place in the game now that it's becomes really sticky and really addictive and really hard to put down. I've put an embarrassing amount of hours into Modern Warfare. I played it pretty much every day since Christmas.
Oh, wow.
It's early May right now as we're recording this.
We're,
so
we're getting on. I've been on 6 months.
Dude, I'm pretty addicted to it. I'm playing a lot of Modern Warfare. I'm also playing Division 2. So my other love beyond role-playing games is looting games. I love Diablo.
Sure.
Borderlands series was gigantic for me too. I love the Borderlands series. I got Borderlands 3. But Division 2 had, well, that game deals with a virus and a pandemic as well. So it's eerie playing that game right now in a deserted Washington, D.C. and bits and pieces of New York when it's all about this dollar flu that spread on Black Friday. And what you see in the entire game is this destroyed, torn apart, literal war-torn New York and Washington, D.C. under this crazed illness that killed tons of people. So I get to go around and meet out frontier crazy justice in this D.C. and New York, and it's kind of fun.
Which I would argue is probably the healthiest way to do that.
Yeah. It's giving it back to the pandemic any way I can in a virtual way. So yeah, I've been playing a ton of both of those games lately. So it's been a lot of guns and bullets and explosions and grenades and all that sort of stuff over the past few months, along with Borderlands as well. It's been a lot of games with guns and shooting people.
yeah. I mean, so what I'll tell you is I downloaded Warzone, which I guess is the free version of Modern Warfare.
Yes.
And it was still downloading last night, but I will more than likely be around. So if we have a chance, I would love to play with you on that. I can't promise that I'll be any good because my FPS skills are questionable at best. I used to play Overwatch a lot. Like, I played that pretty much from launch until I probably played it for like 8 months, where I was daily like 2.5 hours because I was so, it was that same thing. It was like, I was just hooked on the loot box thing. I just wanted to get skins and all that shit. But then I reached a point where I was getting really, really frustrated because Overwatch is so specifically team-based on everything.
Yes.
And I'd be playing with people who would just run off getting kills. And I was like, well, we're supposed to move the payload and we're going to lose because you guys don't want to play this game right. And I don't want to turn into the person that I was turning into. So, the game I'm playing now also has a virus in it, or a epidemic. It's the Outer Worlds, which...
Oh.
I have you played that at all?
I did. I beat it. It's excellent.
Yeah. So I really like it. I mean, I have some criticisms, but I started playing the game like mid-March. And then, of course, I'm walking around Edgewater where there is a flu that is killing people. And the government / corporation, I mean, the corporation is what it is. There is no government in this game. It's about businesses. So libertarian paradise, but they still ignore you and fuck you over. And the whole point is like, hey, if you're working hard enough, you won't get sick.
And
when you stop working, that's when you get sick. So there's this whole thing where I was like, fuck, man, I am in the middle of this right now through allegory. So it's interesting because there's that shared sort of creative blip that happens, I guess, with across game developing, where it's like, we need a virus that causes all this stuff to happen, right? But yeah, so Outer Worlds, I love it. I'm on Monarch now. Like, I'm really taking my time with it because I play for probably 2.5 hours a night, you know, usually after my wife goes to bed, and it's sort of my wind down, but it also winds me up. But I'm a really careful FPS player, and I know that Outer Worlds really isn't an FPS, but like the combat is that kind
it
of.
It is.
It's not as good as some other FPSs I've played. It's actually a little too easy in a lot of situations because I'm the type where I go, okay, I'm going to crouch. I'm going to take my hunting rifle ultra out and I'm just going to pick off people until whatever. And then, you know, one of my party members has to run down and take out one other person. But yeah, but I love this game because what it does is it scratches my sci-fi itch. It's got a lot of RPG elements. It has that brilliant Obsidian / early Fallout dialogue situation where you're just really like, I will spend an entire evening just having conversations with people and ending up getting out of doing anything by just being persuasive enough or lying, whatever.
I love those mechanics in RPGs as well where you can use your intellect and other skills besides brute force to win things and win to just come up with different solutions other than a violent one. Is pretty interesting. One of my friends, Mandy, she told me once she played Skyrim a lot, and she never kills anyone. She only uses restoration and defensive spells, and in order to kill enemies, she turns enemies against other enemies.
And that's amazing.
Yeah. So I mean, that's the way she kills everyone. She doesn't get violent at all, and she's like, in the game, she's built up this garden and she's a horticulturist and, you know, she's very much into magic and growing all these other things. And I never, ever would have thought that anybody would jump into Skyrim and attack it that way, you know?
Yeah.
But it just goes to show if the mechanics are there, the game can allow you to do those things and play it the way you want.
Yeah, I think that's the beauty, right? And when I was reading about, because I tend to read a lot about games before I buy them or even after I've bought them and maybe I haven't started or anything, but I had read, and I can't remember the source, I'm sure it was one of the majors, but I had read about a person who had done a speed run of The Outer Worlds simply by cranking up everything in their communication skills, just basically saying like, all you have to do is go to every single quest NPC and hit them with the highest persuasion possible, and you just don't do anything at all. And the game takes you 35 minutes because you just walk through telling people to do what's right, and they do it, and then you're done. Which I think is cool. I mean, because I think that's wonderful that that's an option. I know that, you know, our mutual friend Jared, like, he always plays stealthy characters, and he tries to avoid fighting. Mm-hmm. And I've always liked that, too, because I've never been, like, playing Fallout, playing any of these games, like, I never go the brute way. Like, I usually go with range and stealth as much as possible. I love being able to just, like, hack systems and whatever else. And, like, if I can sneak in here and just turn this computer on and eliminate the threat that exists, cool. I'm good.
Did you ever play Deus Ex?
I played it with Jared a little bit. Yeah, I think I have it on Steam, but I haven't had Steam on my laptop for a while because it's kind of, well, it's just out of gas. I'll probably bring it back when I have a new machine. But yeah, that's a game where similar sort of thing, right? It's a first person RPG, and it rewards that kind of thinking. Like you can be just like a stealth mage. And all you have to do is sneak up and like poke people and they die if you need to, or you just make them not see you. And it's wonderful.
Yeah. Or, you know, you could be as stealthy as you wanted in that game until you weren't and could just choose to go brute force too. Like there were so many ways to solve problems in that game, and they gave you a bunch of tools and they were like, okay, your turn. Do whatever you want.
Which is, I mean, and that's the thing. Like, you had mentioned before we started recording that you've been playing D&D. I play a lot of D&D. I've been running a couple of campaigns, and that's my thing, right? Is that the beauty of a well constructed RPG of any kind of immersive gaming experience, is that you don't, like, as the boss, the only rule is I know what the beginning and the end are. And I know what the major milestones are, and I'll figure out how you get there when you tell me what you do. But I can move the goalposts as necessary, because there's not really any fun in sort of dictating how everybody has to experience something.
Sure. Yes, that's very well put.
Well, okay. So you're doing the basic gamer thing now, just murking noobs.
It feels like it. It very much feels like it. But you know, also, I guess, you know, in the middle of the winter, obviously the entire pandemic happened, the shelter at home happened, and playing the game with my cousin on almost a daily basis became like a safe oasis and something that was normalized before the pandemic started. So it also becomes like a security blanket in a way for me too. Like it's one of the only parts of my day that I know will be the same as it was before the pandemic started. And there's an insane amount of comfort in that. So that's another reason why I think that I'm playing so much of it too, is because it harkens back to pre-pandemic time. Which wasn't a long time ago, but I mean, you know,
It feels infinitely long ago.
Holy shit, does it? Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy. I have not felt the passage of time so acutely other than when I was like 9 and waiting for my birthday or Christmas to show up, and then you would have this arbitrary elongation of time because we're 2 weeks from your birthday, and it's never going to get here. And then boom, the day after your birthday, you're like, everything went so fast. Everything is like, everything is in crazy sort of Braid-esque time flux right now.
Yeah.
That's a video game reference, listeners. It's a really interesting game. And you should check it out. But yeah, I totally agree with you. Like when I play Outer Worlds now, like just hearing the theme song, the somber na 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 na, like every time that boots up, I feel calmed. It's like, okay, cool. I have a moment where I get to shed all of my sort of concerns about everything and go, you know what? I'm just in my weird little Firefly-esque space odyssey, and I don't have to worry about shit, and I'm happy for a little while.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a definite psychological benefit to that, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, and for real, just, you know, taking out some frustration and energy in a digital way rather than maybe
a real physical actual way. Yes. Yeah. Yes, that is also a healthy outlet too. Yeah, I agree.
You know, as disgusting on one hand as it is, like there's nothing more gratifying for me than headshotting a mercenary. Like, oh, you're a mercenary, look out for this bitch. And then like and it's so crass and it's sad, but I would never do it in real life. And it's just lovely to have a moment where I'm like, I'm in control of something.
Yes.
So let's go back in time real quick, because video games have been part of our lives probably for most of them, I would assume. So what was the first game you ever played?
Oh, the first game?
Well, video game, not game, but you know.
Man, God.
or maybe one that meant something to you? Because I imagine, like, the first game I probably ever played was my dad had one of those paddle and dial-based Pong-only connect to the TV things that we kept in an ottoman that was also a storage box. So I definitely played that first, but that didn't mean a whole lot to me. It's just in there.
Well, I think the one video game thing that meant a lot to me when I was a kid. So I went to Japan when I was in between fifth and sixth grade.
And this is the country on the other side of the world, right?
Yeah.
I'm being funny. Go ahead.
So I visited Japan, and I went over to one of my myriad of cousins' houses, and they were playing Super Mario Brothers 3.
Yes.
It had not launched in the United States.
Oh, shit.
At the time.
This is the wizard level stuff you're gonna drop on us, isn't it?
Yeah. So I got to play Mario Brothers 3, and it blew my mind because, I mean, you could disappear behind stuff in the background.
Yeah.
You could get in these different suits. You could warp to different levels. Like, my cousin was playing, and I remember them finding the warp pipe to the giant stage.
Oh, yeah.
And I was flabbergasted by that, too. I'm like, what is this game is amazing. I've never seen anything like it. And nor did I think that Mario would ever become something like this. So I took all my experience and took it back with me to school. And this was also still before Mario 3 came out in the United States, and everybody thought I was lying. Like, what are you talking about, giant world? That doesn't happen in Mario. Shut up. Get out of here. You're totally fibbing. I'm like, I'm serious, you guys. He's a raccoon. Shut up.
He can fly, guys. He's going to be able to fly.
Get out of here. Mario jumps. Shut up. Not true. You're a liar. So that was pretty memorable in getting a sneak peek on the other side of the world of this massive game that would eventually impact, you know, my youth in a big way because of the pedigree of the game itself and how good it is.
Remarkable.
But also seeing it before anybody else did and knowing what it was and realizing, holy crap, like, yeah, I'm getting a weird preview of this. And obviously this is far before the internet ever even happened, so it's not like there could have been a leak or a video or a sneak of it. Like, I saw it on the other side of the world as a kid, so that was pretty awesome.
They had to make a movie with Jenny Lewis of Rilo Kiley and other acting and Fred Savage. to leak the game, quote unquote, along with the horrible power glove that never worked well. Although I did have one. That game was huge. I remember when I opened that game as a gift, I think for my grandparents one Christmas or birthday. I remember how excited I was to see that yellow box.
Yeah.
You know,
and the logo.
And he's got the
Mario with his arms splayed out and him with the tail on and his cap, like, looking all hopeful. I'm like, wow, this is different.
He is in flight and moving. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's funny, because what I'm going to say is, like, I think Mario Brothers 2 is the game that was most meaningful to me because I was so enamored with the opportunity to choose different characters, and I really liked Toad. I've always liked Toad. I know there's a lot of people who hate Toad or think Toad's, like, lame or something, but I always admired him because he's sort of like, he's not as big as everybody else, but he works really hard.
Like, yeah.
He works so hard that he's the quickest selectable character to pull stuff out of the ground.
Yep.
And it doesn't matter that he doesn't jump as high. He's got, you know, gumption.
Energy. Yeah. I always liked using Toad in that game, too. But talk about a bizarre departure from the original Mario Brothers to 2. Like, what a weird...
And the history... You know the history of that, right? Like, the whole reskinning of the other game.
It wasn't a Mario game originally, right?
Because it was a game called Doki Doki Panic, I think, in Japan. Which was just sort of like an Arabian-themed dream game.
Arabian?
Most of the settings.
Oh, yeah.
We had all these different characters who there's just like a prince and a princess and like a couple of other like side characters. And it was just kind of that. And they decided like, oh, hey, Well, here's what I've heard, is that the original Mario Brothers 2, which would have been like OG Super Mario Brothers, was so hard that Nintendo Japan was like, nobody in the United States is going to play this game. It's too difficult. Oh, they're going to hate it. So we got to give them another Mario game, but we'll give them one that's manageable for lazy American gamers.
For Americans. Oh my God. Yeah. I did not know this.
So they reskinned this game that they already had with Mario characters, which is why you have so many weird departures like Birdie and like the weird Frog King at the end of that game and all the different mechanics. They're totally not Mario mechanics.
But you have to pick up keys and unlock doors with them, and you pull things out of the ground. You're not hitting blocks anymore, really. Yeah,
there's no blocks anymore. Well, there's sort of blocks, but they only say pow on them. So they're a callback to the original, like, Mario Brothers fighting game. Oh, my God. Oh man. But yeah, I really love that game. Do you think Mario 3 was, like, your favorite game of your childhood?
Oh, dude, that's really, really tough. Oh, man.
Because I'm going to ask about your childhood and your teen years. Because I definitely have a separation between those two.
There was a game made by Konami that really, really captured my attention. And it was all due to the mechanics that they had in the game at the time. And I love this game. You probably never heard of it. It's called Bayou Billy. Have you heard of this game before?
I have heard of it, but I don't think I've ever played it.
So there is side-scrolling beat-em-up. There is driving, a lot like Rad Racer, and there's also light gun levels in the game.
Oh, weird.
So you could drive, shoot, and beat up people in one game. And usually, those three different mechanics would be in different games. But they dumped all of that into a story-driven, like, revenge tale in Louisiana about this, you know, like, knife-wielding, croc-killing type Cajun dude who was out for revenge because his girlfriend got kidnapped or whatever, you know, like the standard Nintendo plot.
Woman in the freezer sort of plot that happened.
Yeah.
It still happens with video games, honestly. It's not like it's changed. Does. We're aware it of does. It, but we, but not us, but other people who identify as gamers shame people for bringing that up. Tragic. That's awesome. See that, and that's exactly sort of the thing that I used to like because, God, what was that game called? There was an old regular Nintendo game, where you could, so you had like a mech that you would walk around in. It was all side scrolling, but you had a mech that you could walk around in, and then you could get out and you were this tiny, like half inch tall pixeled guy in a like motorcycle helmet. And then you could run around and shoot with just your little pistol and get back into your mech. And I loved that game so much. I mean, there was...
Are you talking about Blaster Master by any chance?
I think I might be, yes.
Dude, because that game is the bane of my existence. I could not beat that game as a child.
It was impossible.
That game was one of the most difficult games I think I've ever played. I dumped so much time. There's no save points in it.
Yeah.
You needed to beat that game in one go.
Yeah.
Holy crap, is that hard.
It was a game that enticed me because of the that mechanic, but it was otherwise unplayable.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, this is fun.
So different.
I died, and then I'm done. I'm not going to play this again.
Yeah. There was a gigantic overworld that you could jump into your car/tank thing, and you could jump with the vehicle, or you could get out of your vehicle and become a tiny little dude. And the tiny dude also had like different types of top-down kind of levels where you could walk around and be in a kind of maze. So the game was broken up into those two different types of gameplay. One when you're just the explorer, soldier, whatever you are, with a laser on this alien world or whatever it is. I don't even know. And then there's the
bombed out 80s city.
Is it?
And, yeah, because sometimes it was like urban areas and other times it was like alien landscapes.
Yes.
Think maybe I might be misremembering, but that's
yeah it was a weird mishmash, but that game I dumped a lot of hours into, and I got always frustrated with it. I never could beat it. So difficult that one.
Not unlike the awful original like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles for Nintendo that you just could not play. Like, the water level where you have to swim around and avoid the mines was just impossible.
I rented that game so many times from local video shops and from my local Blockbuster in the attempts to try to beat it, because I like the music. Obviously, I like the property at the time.
Yeah.
But man, yeah, that water level. As soon as you started talking about it, I could see Michelangelo swimming around the mines. As soon as you started talking about it, that memory flooded up in my head. So yeah.
Yeah. No, it was torturous. But we did get a very nice adaptation of the arcade game later that was actually very playable and a lot of fun.
Yes.
I'm going to go with, so favorite game of my childhood is tough because I have to give it a tie because we've talked about our love of RPGs. So
yes.
I played the shit out of Secret of Mana and Chrono Trigger, both games that are just fantastic.
They are.
And both games where I had such a difficult time beating them only because I was unwilling emotionally to say goodbye to the characters who I had named and who I had spent countless hours with. I was like, I don't really care how it ends necessarily. I don't want to stop hanging out with these people. But the other game is Battletoads, which it occupied at least a year of my life with one of my best friends trying to beat Battletoads and never being able to beat one of the later like hover bike levels, which had the same problem as Ninja Turtles water level, which is like you have to just memorize 5 consecutive minutes of map and make 0 mistakes to get through it.
Yeah. Savage. Rough. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, people don't know how bad we had it back then, because now you could get you could emulate it and just have save points, and I'm sure none of it's even an issue anymore.
Right. Right.
But let's talk about our teens. I'm gonna talk about the game that was most important to my teenage years was Final Fantasy VII, which was a game that I think I played from when I was 16 until somewhat embarrassingly, I remember senior year of high school, several friends came over to my house either on a ditch day or something like that, and we had nothing to do. So I was like, well, I mean, I've got this, and I could play it, I guess, if you guys just want to hang out, like, we can listen to music or whatever. And so, like, a handful of my high school friends watched me finally actually beat Final Fantasy VII, which is, on one hand, wonderful, because I beat a role-playing game, which I did not want to do for most of my youth, but it's also tragically nerdy.
Yeah, Final Fantasy VII absolutely is a high watermark seminal work. They did remake it and are remaking it. I tried the demo of the new one, and it has unbelievable amount of polish in it. I have not tried the full version of that, but yeah, for most people, the emotion that was in that game was, there was a lot of it. And that usually did not happen in games. Like, there was no emotional stakes. It was just a game. It didn't tell an emotional story in any way. It didn't hook you the way it hooked me as a kid, even.
Yeah.
I remember there was another game. It was another RPG. My brother and I had a TurboGrafx-16.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
System with the CD on it.
I had a meter with one.
Yeah. We had the CD system. We spent a lot of money on that. And so the bonus of getting the TurboGrafx-16 was that its sister system, the PC Engine in Japan, all of the CDs and cards and cartridges worked without any issue from both systems. They could go back and forth.
Oh, wow.
There was no
regional problem.
Yeah. None. No regional issues at all. So my uncle would send us PC Engine games that were Japanese that we could play in our TurboGrafx. And there was this RPG where we couldn't understand anything, but much like Final Fantasy VII, there was dramatic death of a female character in the story, and my brother was just like in bed for a day because he was so bummed that that character had died. I remember it, it affected him in a big way, and I'm sure that Final Fantasy VII did that, was like an emotional gut punch to a lot of other kids and youth in general due to everything that happens in that game as well. So yeah, it's kind of a kind of an interesting happenstance, you know, like for a game to do that. I really can't think of another game that had that much emotional punch probably before or since then that I can think of.
Yeah, no, I don't think so either, because a lot of games would. I mean, there's something about Final Fantasy VII that manages to deliver something that is so potentially melodramatic in a way that actually just landed. And this is also coming from the time when it's like, this is PS1 graphics. So this
yeah.
It's not like you're seeing anything akin to human beings suffer anything.
Right.
It still resonated.
It did.
And
very
so
much.
So many other games around that era, you're like Fallout and Fallout 2, like you would have similar sort of things, but they would kind of be played for comedy. Because like I remember in Fallout 2, like you begin Fallout 2 with the mission of going to get the Gek for your tribe of people who have lived, who have sort of risen out of the ashes of the first game.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just wander around for long enough, you just start getting messages where the guy's like, hey, we're dying here. And then eventually it's just like, no, you can legit just ignore it and play the rest of the game without ever doing anything for them. And there is no impact.
Wow.
It sort of does not matter. And you don't get a huge dramatic, like, there's no fail state for it. And there's certainly not anything that says, like, you're wrong. It's just kind of like, hey, here's a message. You weren't in time. We're dead. The end. Continue wandering around and looking for Douglas Adams clues in this game. So yeah, I don't know. Was there a game of your teen years that really hit you?
See, that's a very, very difficult question. You know, I've been gaming my whole life as a teen. It's difficult for me to remember what I was playing at that time. I would have to say that due to having the TurboGrafx for so long, I think I graduated after the TurboGrafx-16. We had a PlayStation 2, and then I've been I was Sony pretty much from then on, apart from a short hiatus with an Xbox. So that's the systems. But yeah, I mean the PC Engine games that my uncle sent, he sent two games. One was a fighting game, a one-on-one fighting game, much like Street Fighter, mm-hmm. which is like a flat plane fighter. And then there was another one that was like a relationship dating slice of life sim, kind okay. of. Both of those games were based on the anime Ranma Half. Are you familiar with that at all?
Just a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I definitely know what it is, and I've read about it. I have not watched a lot or read a lot, so.
Yeah, so he knew we were Ranma fans, and we had picked up the comics, and or at least the translated anime, and he knew we were fans, so he sent over these games that never saw the light of day in the United States. We would have never been able to know these things existed if it weren't for him sending us these things randomly. So it was a really interesting window into, you know, licensed property stuff and how very, very Japanese those Japanese games were too.
Sure. Yeah. Well, yeah. And I think there's a beautiful sentiment here, which is that video games really can connect people across the globe in ways that are very powerful. Mm-hmm. I mean, they don't always, because we get, you know, games get boiled down to modern warfare, right? I think a lot of people who don't play games tend to go with, well, yeah, you go and you yell at other kids, you say horrible things and you shoot people, and that's all video gaming is. And that's not really true, because I've probably had some of the more interesting narrative experiences of my life. I mean, like The Last of Us, or I don't know if you ever played I Am Setsuna. But that was a Squaresoft released sort of reboot of the Chrono Trigger era kind of look of an RPG.
Really? Huh. And I hadn't heard of it.
Check it out. It's not perfect by any means, but it really scratches that itch, and it's so sweet and sincere, and it just reminded me of that 16-bit era of the overhead fighting RPG where you're like, yeah, this is what it was about. It was about just like learning these stories and hearing about people suffering and not knowing what to do with themselves, and then going, hey, I feel that way too. I don't have a goal either. I identify with you, strange character. You're in my party now. Let's go. Oh man. Shoot. Like, is there a game in your adulthood that's grabbed you? Is there a favorite game of adulthood up until now? And that's so broad. Like, I don't even know if I should ask this question because I don't know if I can answer it. But I'm asking it anyway.
Yeah, that's tough. God. I'm just trying to think of the properties and the games that have stuck with me the longest. As much as it's easy to bag on them for super buggy games, I really am a sucker for Bethesda's titles. I got suckered into Fallout and Skyrim and Elder Scrolls. That engine is really old. It desperately needs an update underneath it. But just the amount of emergent gameplay that can occur in those worlds is almost unbounded. Like, there's so much exploration and searching and hunting and happenstance that can wildly occur in their worlds that I think it's just really, there's so many systems and mechanics to master that Bethesda's games in the Fallout and Elder Scrolls engines, those titles, they keep me coming back.
Yeah.
Despite all their bugs, despite all their repetition and making almost carbon copies of them. I even got suckered into buying Fallout 76 for crying out loud. Because I just like that series and that world and the tone and the dark sense of humor that's involved with it. I think of Bethesda's titles, at least like, it's like comfort food, I would say, you know? It's just like the Call of Duty for right now.
Sure.
Like, it's so easy to slip into a Bethesda world and lose your sense of time because you can go anywhere and do anything. I remember the first time I ever played Oblivion. You were supposed to take the ring from, or deliver the ring or whatever it was, right? I never did it. I kept playing the game, and I kept the ring on my person and kept wandering around and getting into trouble for hours on end. I'm like, I can do it whatever the hell I want to. I don't need to follow the story here. I can make my own. And that, I think, is, especially with those titles themselves, I don't think I was ever presented with a world that big before that I could do that in.
Oh, yeah. Fallout 3, playing that on the PS3, and I relished every single moment of that. I also did not play the story until I absolutely ran out of side quests, and I had everywhere possible. And I had reached a point where, you know, the last 5 hours of that game that I played was me just constantly pausing to save because if I got more than three enemies on the screen at the same time, it would lock up and then crash. And I would have to restart. So I was just, it was anxiety ridden, but I loved every minute of it. And it managed to scratch a lot of those sort of Squaresoft itches where I really felt emotional resonance around the story with his dad and everything else, or, you know, around your character's dad. And then it was just so, it was beautiful to walk around. Again, it's like decimated post-apocalyptic DC. And, like, I've been to most of these places because I have relatives on the East Coast. And, like, I know where I'm going. And so it's really interesting to see that perspective. But I agree with you. Like, one of the things that I really enjoy about gaming is not following any of the quests and just walking around until something happens. And Bethesda does knock that out, or yeah, they really knock that out of the park, because you will stumble upon, you know, Fallout 2. Like, if you walk for long enough, you're going to randomly encounter a whale splattered across the ground with a flower pot in reference to Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Like, you're going to get stuff that you didn't even expect. And it's not even the game. It's just, hey, we had a lot of fun putting this together.
Right. And having briefly worked in gaming too, I know how much work goes into making a game, and the credit list at the end of a video game these days is endless. Like, it easily rivals the amount of people needed to make a film or a movie, and definitely more, I would say, because you have to create this entire world from scratch. And that's another one of the things that really impresses me to a great degree about games like Division 2 and even Call of Duty Modern Warfare is the sheer amount of freaking detail in the environments and in the worlds that are around you at any given time.
Oh yeah.
There's stress and age and wear and dirt, and everything looks aged to such a degree that it looks and feels lived in and real. And that hasn't happened in gaming in forever. Like you said about Final Fantasy VII, they're polygonal characters, but yet they carried emotional weight with them. But this is kind of the opposite. This is like the crispest, cleanest, most beautiful looking images that mirror real life. And even when I'm running around in Call of Duty sometimes, I'll be in a map and I'll look around it at like rust on some metal or scratches or like age or things like knocked over that are just part of the environment, and they don't need to be there, but they are there regardless of that. And I think that kind of artistry is so easy to forget completely when you're running around in worlds this big and involved, and when you're just clocking the game and playing the game, the world that you're in it's so easy to recede behind the activity of the game itself. Sometimes I just stop and marvel at, holy crap, look at all this detail, all this color, all these tiny little models of things. Like, they had to create piles and piles of trash and debris in Division 2 to make it look dirty and fucked up and decimated, you know? And
they're not just asset dumps where it's like, well, it's the same three posters and barrels everywhere.
Right. Right. They're not copy pasting assets either. Most of this stuff looks like it's from scratch, or a lot of it is. Certainly a ton of it looks like it is. So those things still give me pause playing modern games, and it's just going to get better and better as time goes by.
Yeah, I think Jedi Fallen Order is a game that I played recently as well, where the vistas in that are fantastic.
Are they?
Some beautiful views in that game. The game itself is hit or miss. It's not a bad game, but it's not a great game. I mean, I've talked about it before on this show, but there are some beautiful views, and you know, and what's funny is, like, that's a game where one of the early updates to the game was, hey, we're adding a camera view thing to it so you can take pictures of stuff that you think is pretty, because that's what some gamers want, is to be able to say, hey, this is beautiful and I want to be able to capture this moment. But yeah, like that, I mean, even the Souls games, like, I'm always blown away with the level of intricacy to things, right? Like, the Souls games, almost ever, like, so much stuff is interactable. And then there's hidden stuff that's interactable that is wild. And yeah, I mean, those are kind of, like, the Souls games are kind of the games of my adulthood, I guess, because I have a very strong love-hate relationship with them, where they are so difficult, but I have beat every single one of them, and it has been a challenge. And I beat Sekiro, and I was so, like, there was such a, like, my body, like, I disappeared from my body. I can't even explain it. Like, you go into the final boss of Sekiro, and it's a four-phase fight. Okay, have you played it?
I have not.
Okay, so you enter a four-phase fight that includes, you fight a boss that you had fought earlier who is extra strong. When you defeat that boss, the boss boss emerges from that boss's body in a very magical sort of mystical way. And then you have to fight that guy through three phases, where in the first phase, pretty normal. Second phase, suddenly huge spear. Third phase, now he has like a Gatling gun and a spear, and you will have a katana. And that's it.
Man.
And you're just, and you, and because it's a Souls game, you have to time your deflects perfectly, because otherwise you take half-life damage, like hit twice, you're done.
Oh God.
When I got that, like the rhythm, there is, I don't know. I mean, I can only assume that this is the way like a naturalist feels when they go into nature and they're like, I am at one with the universe. That was the feeling I had when I beat this game, because I was like, this is it. I got it. Somehow my rhythm was right and I was able to do this thing. It's amazing.
See, I've never played the Souls games, mostly because like gaming for me is not about that level of challenge anymore. It's about unwinding and relaxing and
yeah.
And
I don't think I would play them in this moment.
I don't need to be challenged like that by a game anymore. So kudos to you for tackling those.
Dog food break. Okay. he was just going to keep whining. So I have two more. I have two more questions before we wrap the show up. So my first question is, what game do you wish existed that doesn't exist? Like, I don't know if this resonates with you or not, but I had several things in several moments in childhood where I wanted there to be a video game of something that I really cared about and never happened.
Huh.
Most supremely in fifth or sixth grade, I remember sitting in the library of my elementary school with friends plotting out what a Calvin and Hobbes video game would be.
Ooh.
Because I wanted that to exist so badly. And what I envisioned was basically kind of what you were talking about with Bayou Billy, where it's a game that is a beat 'em up and it's also a driving game. And it's all these things, because Calvin Hobbes, you know, I wanted a Spaceman Spiff level. I wanted a transmogrifier level. I wanted a time travel in the cardboard box level.
Oh, man.
And I wanted the superhero character whose name I can't remember now. I wanted all that mixed together. Plus, like, just Calvin and Hobbes hanging out. And it would sort of be like, it would be a two-person game where... you know, if you had two players, one person's Calvin, one person's Hobbes, but if it's one player, you got to switch between the two of them as you needed in a sort of Street Fighter-esque, Marvel versus Capcom-esque kind of way. So that's mine. That's the game that I wish would have existed and does not.
Wow, that's a lot of dreaming and thought put behind that. That's a really good one. I can almost see like a 16-bit version of Calvin and Hobbes in my head. Like pixelated a little bit, and you know, like the overworld might be either their house or the woods, because they're always just walking around in the woods and talking with each other. So the connected tissue between levels could be them walking in the woods, and then they have a burst of inspiration or something, and then they're pretending, and you get to be Spaceman Spiff and a bunch of other stuff. And that would be so cute. Oh my God. What a great idea.
Yeah, it was great. But Bill Watterson doesn't want a franchise or
license. Oh, no. No licenses for you. Sorry. Yeah. Oh, that's such a good question, man. I've never tried to imagine out of whole cloth, like, a gaming experience in that way. I never thought of building out my own games in that way either. That's a really good question. I can't think of an answer, because I don't think I've ever put any thought into it in that way before. That's a good one.
Okay.
I'll have to shelve it.
Ah, no worries. I mean, maybe what we'll do is maybe I'll have you back on and you'll have an answer then.
Sure.
I assume this question will haunt your nights.
It will now. Yeah. It's going to bother me for days.
okay. So then my last question is, what forthcoming game are you most excited for? Like, what's coming up that you're like, wow, I can't wait to get a shot at that?
With all of the titles that I've talked about on this so far, I'm sounding like the most generic gamer ever. I'm gonna have to say Cyberpunk. I can't say anything else.
I mean, I'm gonna. Ritz, I'll just say that's what I was going to say too. So don't feel bad about it. Like,
yeah, I mean, I let me put it this way. I have not beaten The Witcher yet. I am on like one of the last quests of the very last expansion pack with the that deals with the vampire. Mm-hmm. Because I don't want the story to end on Geralt. I don't want the story to end. It's too good. The world is so well put together. The characters, the quest lines, for crying out loud, have so much emotion and so much surprise in them. You want to talk about emotional game? Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh my God. There are moments in that game where I violently fucked up everything in the world and didn't know I was doing it until after it happened. And I saw, like, utter devastation because of some of the choices I made, and I never went back and redid them because I'm like, well, this is the choice I've made. I have to live with it now, and so does Geralt, and so does the rest of the world, you know? And those kind of impacts were huge playing The Witcher. So knowing that that team is behind this futuristic property, mm-hmm. of which I've loved forever, I love that world and that style, I can't wait to get my grubby paws on that game with all the systems and detail that they've jammed into that from what I've seen so far. That's my big want. A lot of my friends are so mad that it got delayed from April to September, and I'm telling them all, like, guys, I want a game that works. I want a polished one. I do not want a AAA game that is half-assed and buggy and requires, you know, a 56 gig patch on day one. Because it's a piece of crap. I want a polished $60 experience. I don't want something quick and dumb. So yeah. I am willing to wait a few extra months for them to put spit and polish on that thing to have a better experience rather than having something rushed and lower quality like so many other AAA titles have been over the past few years.
Oh, man.
So yeah, Cyberpunk is it.
Yeah. I second that wholeheartedly. Like, that is, I am so looking forward to that. Like, my goal is to make, I mean, I'll be through the Outer Worlds by then, I hope. But I grind and I linger a lot. That's just the way I play games. But that is the next thing that I'm super stoked about. And to your point, like, to your point about these AAA titles that are trash when they come out, I pre-ordered One Punch Man because I really, really like that show.
Yes.
And I really like that property. And guess what? That game's not very good.
No. No, it isn't.
Have you played it?
I saw the reviews of it.
Yeah.
I saw the studio that made it, and you know, I was very sad to read what I did about it because it seemed like visually it hit all the right notes, but mechanically the games just sort of fall flat. From what I read,
and they patched it. I haven't gone back to it since a couple of patches have happened, and maybe I will, but I'm kind of like, I don't think anything's going to change until I read patch notes that say, like, we made the game that you wanted this to be. it's so, like, it's fun to create your own superhero. So I created, like, a superhero that's, like, the moon god, right? Whatever. But you have so many limited choices about what you can do with customization at the beginning because you unlock customization over time, which then means that the character you've made is one that you end up manipulating over the course of the gameplay. So you're not actually connected to who you've made, right? You're just sort of playing them as an avatar, which is, I guess that's fine for some people, but I would rather have, give me all the options at the outset, save for like the powerful items that I might earn over the course of my efforts so that what I'm saying is I'm augmenting this individual who I have confidence in rather than saying like, oh, the individual doesn't matter because I'll actually change the face skin and the body skin and the clothing and all these things as many times as I want throughout the thing. And then ultimately the game's really just like you run around doing fetch quests that require you to do beat 'em up arena fights that are not based on skill. Like, they're sort of based on whether you hit the button early enough that you can chain beat up the computer character, because if you don't, you just get punched and you can't do anything about it either. It's just poorly, and it really, like, it I probably played like 12 hours of it because I was like, well, this is kind of fun and I like it enough, but it wears its welcome out. It really kind of feels a little bit like a mobile game where at best you'd just be like tapping on the screen.
Oh no.
And it wouldn't really matter how you tapped because you're just tapping. And if you tap with one finger, you punch. And if you tap with two fingers, you special move. And those are kind of the only things. But
that's really so disappointing. What a wonderful property to screw up and make like terrible fluff with, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is it's such a cool like subversion of superheroes.
It is.
And to say like
in every sense.
And then basically your job in the game is to make your way up from C level to S. And it's like, okay. So basically you're telling me the thing that they're making fun of in the show is what I'm supposed to like line up to participate in the game. Yeah, it's tough. And it's a bummer because it's like, I think I spent like $75 on that because I pre-ordered and I got like the bonus context. It was like, I want all the cool things. Doesn't matter. But that's the sort of thing like that will lead to me not pre-ordering a lot of things in the future. Because the cosmetic bonuses they provide are never worth it. oh, man. All right. Well, hey, this has been a lot of fun, Marcus. Thank you for being on the podcast to talk about games. I think what I'd like to do is try to have you back on again sometime in the future. Maybe we can talk about games again, or we'll just talk about something else and figure it out.
I would love the opportunity to return. I would also love to be on the game show proper whenever that's back on. I haven't had an opportunity yet, but I would love to be part of that.
Yeah, I would like you on every iteration of this show at some point.
Excellent.
I love spending time with you, and I love this conversation. I think this was really interesting, and like
we've discovered how utterly basic my video game tastes are despite loving the genre for over 30 years.
but with good reason, right? Like in a time of crisis, you're just going to fucking pick up a box of Frosted Flakes. It doesn't matter how nuanced your taste is. You're like, you know what? This delivers. I need calories and I want sweetness and I got to get through tonight. And that's what a lot of games do.
And I'm going to pour the biggest bowl of it I possibly can and just gorge myself on it. Like, dump my head in the entire bowl and just go...
Strap the feed bag on and go to town. Yes. So Marcus, do you have anything that you would like to plug on the show? Is there anything you want people to, you know, anything you're doing that you want people to pay attention to? Anything just generally you want people to pay attention to?
Oh, wow. I'm a narrator of audiobooks. I have about 20 books out there on Audible. You can just find my name, Marcus Freeman. There's a bunch of stuff on there. My best-selling book that I've ever done is called Dear Reader. It's a bizarre book.
It's about a person who we thought was dead briefly for like 3 days and then decided it wasn't dead.
It's about the grandfather of the current leader of North Korea, Kim Jong-il, and it's about his life, but it's a pseudo-biography, and I narrate his entire life factorally from his kind of sort of point of view. It's very dark, but it also is extraordinarily educational on the history of North Korea and how they got to where they are now. It's pretty eye-opening. I had to stop many times in the narration of it and go, is that true? And I looked it up and I'm like, oh my God, that is true. you can find Marcus Freeman on Audible. There's about 20 different audiobooks on there, all of which are myriad of different subjects. Most of it's nonfiction because I like to teach people stuff and want people to learn things. So if you're into that or curious at all, take a look on Audible for Marcus Freeman.
Right on. Thank you so much again for being on the show.
Of course.
And we will have you back. Do not worry. You will come back on this program.
Awesome.
Hell or high water.
Can we be vague together? I want to be vague together.
Oh, I want to be super vague. I mean, this is pretty vague anyway, because we're just sort of vaguely talking about video games, but not talking specifically deep dive about anything. But I would like to have you on for the game show version of the show. We will figure this out. I mean, at some point, you'll be able to travel here or vice versa with microphones, and we'll get it. We'll get it to happen.
Do it. Yes.
But yeah, listeners, if you like this show, please rate and review us. That would be helpful. That helps people know that we exist. Also, you can check out all of our social media stuff. We have At A Vague Idea Pod on Twitter, At A Vague Idea Podcast on Instagram, and The A Vague Idea Podcast online group thing on Facebook, where you can play Pamu Pam de Terre online. Recently, we played Pamu Pam de Terre online about the underboob from Too Hot to Handle. Is that an apple or potato? You guys have to tell us, but you can only tell us in the Facebook group. Otherwise, I would like to thank Michael J. O'Connor for the theme song, which is fantastic. And you should check out his music at michaeljoconnor.bandcamp.com. And otherwise, guys, put masks on, be considerate of other people, and just stay sane and stay alive, okay? Thank you for listening, and bye-bye.
Bye. Till next time.
Till next time.
A Vague Idea is written and produced by me, Nate Regolia, with Shannon Page and sometimes John Perros. Information about topics often come from Wikipedia, so hey, why not donate a bit to that? Sound effects are Creative Commons public domain. If you like this podcast, tell a few people and subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you listen. And if you happen to like reading science fiction, check out the small press I started with my friend Sean Grokowski. You can find Spaceboy books at readspaceboy.com.